Hi, I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Another episode of the Handgun World Podcast coming right up. So many thanks for listening. This is episode number 311 as I cruise in the gorgeous, luxurious, spacious, and elegant Handgun World studio, mobile studio, once again. This is my mobile studio, my 2002 Honda Accord. And I keep getting this craving for a new vehicle, but then I remember car payments. I don't like car payments. Vehicles, in my opinion, man, you can spend so much money on them, and I just don't like all those payments. I've been free of car payments for quite a while now, and it's a great feeling. So I'll keep cruising around as long as this little Honda will run and get me around, and I'll keep talking to you about guns. How's that? So for this episode, I had a chance to have another guest, and I'm going to talk about that guest here in just a minute. I want to start off by saying this year I'm making a commitment for 2015. It's taken a while. Here it is, March already, and I'm just finally now figuring out what I'm going to commit for the rest of the year. But as you know, I was down and out the first couple months of this year. My commitment is going to be training and ammo, training and ammo, training and ammo. Now, I'm not going to just talk about training in this episode. My guest is a trainer, but we're not just going to talk about training. Matter of fact, we don't talk about training at all. So for some of you who say, oh, Bob, you talk too much about training on your show, well, guess what? No training coming up. We're going to talk about guns, and we're going to talk about open carry. Two cool subjects, guns and open carry. And we're going to talk about two specific guns, and you know, by the title of the podcast, you probably already figured that out. But I, personally, for Bob Main, am going to take at least one, maybe two training classes, because I've got to keep my skills sharp, and I'm going to be purchasing a whole bunch of ammunition. I got a lot of guns. You know, hey, who among us listening to this show can say that we have all the guns we want? Right? Most of us probably don't have all the guns we want. And, you know, do you have all the guns you need? Well, you know, that's a tough question, too, because what do you need? Who knows what you need? And who's to tell you what you need? But this year I want to work on me. And I think that's the most, because I think that you are the most important asset that you have. So I think that there's no other asset greater that's going to generate more returns for you than you yourself. Okay, find an investment that's going to generate more returns than you yourself. You are the greatest asset that you have. So I plan on taking a course in June, and I'm probably going to take another probably in October. I'm looking at June and October for this year, and do a lot more competing in IDPA, because I'm still a believer in IDPA competition or USPSA competition. Somebody emailed me recently and asked me if it was a substitute for training. And I said, no, it's not really a substitute for training, but it's something that you should do. I'll say that again. I don't think the competition is a substitute for self-defense training, but I think it's something that you should do. Competition, especially IDPA or USPSA, both of them, they were developed with the concealed carrier in mind. And when those organizations were started, if I'm not mistaken, they were started to help people sharpen up on the defensive use of their firearm. They have since turned into a game. But there's a lot of good things about those games that I think you need to know, like how to draw quickly and efficiently from your holster, how to move and shoot, how to very quickly put hits on target because you're against the clock and you're competing with other people. So it will sharpen your speed. And they're all about safety as well in USPSA and IDPA. So it will help you with your safety skills. It will help you do everything that you need safely, especially the draw, the safe draw. So that's why I think you really should do it. And if you're serious about carrying a gun, if you're serious about being able to handle a gun competition, find your local IDPA club or your local USPSA club. That stands for United States Practical Shooting Association, which is a part of IPSC. For all you people that wonder what these acronyms are, International Pistol... Gosh, I'm drawing a blank now as to what IPSC is. I think it's International Pistol Shooting Competition or something like or Practical Shooting Competition. I think that's what it is. So anyway, sorry about that. I messed up IPSC there to all you IPSC fans. But get involved in some kind of a competition sport. Okay, so I had a chance recently to interview John Payne. John is a law enforcement officer. He's been a law enforcement officer for several years. He's also a trainer for Suarez International. Again, we did not talk about training in this episode. We talked about guns and we talked about open carry and a couple of other miscellaneous items. But he's a very good trainer. John's trained me on a lot of techniques that I know. He's one of the top tier instructors for Suarez International, but also his experience as a pretty active law enforcement officer lends a lot to this conversation that we recently had. So let's take a quick break, and then I'm going to bring John Payne on the show from Suarez International.
80% of all homicides are gang and drug trafficking related, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. That means at least 80% of all firearm homicides are caused by gangs in the drug trade. Not you, not your neighbor, despite what Dianne Feinstein might think. On average, gang members arrested for murder are often suspects in two other homicides. These two items together show that 80% of gun homicides could be stopped by incarcerating as few as 3,000 well-known repeat violent offenders. That's who Feinstein should be working against, not you. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Well, joining me on the show, once again, John Payne from Suarez International. Welcome back, John.
Hey, thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure to be back. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a while, and most people know it's because I've been out a while, but I'm back, as I mentioned last week, and I'm ready to go.
That's wonderful. You know, you and your family have been in our thoughts and prayers for a long time, and we talk about you every week, and everything, and I'm glad things are taking a nice turn for the positive for you. It's a good feeling that things are going well for you.
Well, I'm humbled. Thanks for all the thoughts and prayers and everything, and I appreciate that, John. And you know, I want to give you the proper introduction because some people might be listening to my show for the first time, or they're rather new. I want to let people know you are a Tier 1 instructor for Suarez International and also a law enforcement officer. And I'm pretty sure I got that correct. Tell me if you want to add anything.
Yes, sir. I'm a Tier 1 instructor for Suarez International. I teach probably 98% of our curriculum. I've been with Suarez International since 2010. Okay. I'm also a Texas CHL instructor. I'm a Texas law enforcement instructor. And I'm a Texas peace officer.
Excellent. So, quite a resume, and I wanted people to know that, you know, your experience and your resume speaks for itself, and we're going to talk about a few things today, but I just wanted to make sure that people understand what it is that you do. Refresh me, how long have you been with Suarez?
I've been with Suarez now, we're going on 5 years.
That's kind of what I thought, yeah, and you've been in law enforcement how many years?
If you count my military law enforcement, since 1988.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm starting to see the gray hairs.
Excuse me. Tell me about that. I can educate you all about gray hairs, or, as my situation is right now, no hair.
Yeah, I've got some buddies that, I'll go ahead and tell you, my jiu-jitsu coach has got a head full of hair, but he keeps his head shaved because it's all gray.
Well, a lot of people do that. Mine's just gone from the chemotherapy. Hopefully it'll be back in a few months.
And I won't mention his name on air because he'll make me pay for the class.
Yeah, it'll be an extra workout for you, won't it?
Exactly.
Well, I wanted to bring you on for this episode because, as I promised some of the listeners, we're going to compare a couple of pistols, a couple of small pistols, the Carr PM9 and the Smith & Wesson Shield in 9mm. I want to start this off by letting people know that I think it was a couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I turned you on to the Carr PM9. It's a pistol I've owned for a long time, and you decided to pick one up a couple years back, didn't you?
Yes, sir, I did. You know, I was exposed to Carr early on when they began producing the K9. I worked at a gun shop in Abilene. It was the Abilene Indoor Firing Line, a gun shop and indoor range. And we just happened to be down the street from CD&N, and we had no problem getting the Carr pistols into our display cases. And so we had the Carr K9s, and believe it or not, they had an economy model back in 1997, I believe it was, called the Carr E9.
Oh, okay.
Which was almost identical to the K9, except for the finish was not nearly as nice, and the front sight was staked instead of being dovetailed.
Right.
I had experience with those, and you know, shortly after the K9 was released, the K40 was released, and I owned a K40. It was a K40 Elite 98, which it was stainless and was nicely polished, but it was a nice little pistol. I hadn't really messed with the Palmer frame pistols a whole lot from Carr until I met you. And we did that class together in Dallas.
Right.
And you pulled that little bad boy out and said, "Hey, I want to see how well you can shoot this at 15 yards." And we were both kind of surprised at how well it performed.
Yeah, we were. And you got one. And, you know, I just want to say this. I like both of these pistols. I like them very much, the Carr PM9 and the Shield. I mentioned in one of my recent podcasts that for a small gun, for a small backup or small gun that I want to carry, I'm starting to prefer the Shield over the Carr for a few reasons. But you know what? Right now my Carr is over at Carr Arms getting the slide fixed up after I dropped it. But I'm going to continue to carry that and shoot that thing. But you did real well at 15 yards. Matter of fact, I think I remember seeing you ringing some steel at about 50 yards with that.
Oh, 100 yards.
100 yards, okay.
It was 100 yards with the PM9, and it was on a full-size IDPA steel silhouette. But still, I mean, it's more than accurate enough for what it's designed for.
It is, and that's one of the things I really like about Carr pistols, is I think their accuracy is outstanding. The double-action trigger is outstanding. It's one of the best double-action triggers I've ever fired in a semi-automatic pistol.
I would definitely agree with you there. I think the double-action trigger on the Carr is, to me, it's even smoother than many of my revolvers, even my J-frames, and comes close to rivaling the K-frame that you used for your Texas CHM instructor class.
Yep. Now, let me explain why I have been kind of warming up to the Shield 9mm lately. The biggest reason is because when I shoot this thing, it feels like I'm shooting a larger gun. When I shoot the Carr PM9, I can tell I got a small pistol in my hand. I can tell that thing, it recoils a bit more, and I guess my big long fingers, I can wrap completely around that Carr's grip. And with the Shield, I can't quite do that, and it kind of feels like I'm shooting a larger gun. That's the biggest advantage. But what do you like about the Carr PM9?
Well, what I like about the Carr PM9 is that I think from handling both of them, it's a little more versatile than the Shield. It is smaller. I mean, we're talking a pistol that is 4 inches in height and is just slightly over 5.5 inches in length, in total length. And while I rarely carry the PM9 as a primary, I do use it quite often as a secondary pistol.
Right.
And I think in that role, it does very well. And in that role, I mean, you know, I've got a DVD out that's a little bit dated now, but is a pocket pistol DVD through Swords International. The PM9 can fit in many pockets that the Shield cannot. And while pocket carry has limitations unto itself, it is easier to carry a PM9 in a pocket than it is a Shield.
Well, you're correct about that. I thought it was kind of funny. When Smith & Wesson first released the Shield, there was a lot of advertisement about it being the latest and greatest pocket pistol. And I kind of laugh right now because this Smith & Wesson Shield's way too big for pocket carry, unless you're wearing some type of pants with humongous pockets. But I would say it's much more easier, you're right, to drop the PM9 into a pocket than the Shield.
Well, I think that the term pocket pistol is kind of become a generic term, just because it rhymes and it describes these subcompact pistols, when some of them really don't fit into a pocket. As a matter of fact, I kind of started to shy away from the term pocket pistol and go more towards, you know, a covert carry pistol.
Or backup gun. Now, one thing I like about the Shield is, it seems like there's a wider variety of sights for this pistol versus the Carr PM9.
I'm sure there is. The only aftermarket sights I've seen for the PM9 would be either Trigicon or Meprolite, and then I believe you can still get a Novak rear sight for the PM9, but I think that's the extent of it.
You can get XS Big Dots for it, too.
I wasn't going to count those.
Yeah, I know, but I had to throw that out there because, you know, they are available, even though I know both you and I are not real big fans of those.
No, I can hit well with them. For me, they don't float my boat.
So how many rounds have you shot through your PM9?
Oh, I've probably been through about 500 rounds thus far, strictly of training ammo, not counting, every year I shoot my carry ammo out of it, replace the carry ammo. So, you know, 500 rounds of training ammo and probably close to 100 rounds of carry ammo.
Okay. I've owned a PM9. I think I bought it. It was either in 2007 or 2008. So I've had one quite a while. And I love it. I really, really, really like it. And like I said, I'm glad to own both. And what I've been liking lately about the Smith & Wesson Shield, well, actually, first of all, let me cover something that I don't like. I don't think the trigger on the Shield is anywhere as good as the Carr PM9. I don't think it breaks as clean. It is a shorter trigger pull, but I much prefer the trigger on the Carr PM9. I do, however, find that the Shield, when it comes in terms of actually concealing it, it's just as easy for me to conceal this as it is a PM9 if I'm carrying inside the waistband.
Well, inside the waistband, if I'm carrying inside the waistband, more than likely, and I'm looking to carry something smaller than my Glock 19,
yeah,
I'm probably going to carry my Glock 26.
So you're gonna prefer the G26 over the Shield?
Oh, absolutely, and that's just because, well, you know how my G26 is set up. It's set up as an enhanced carry pistol with the suppressor sights, the threaded barrel, the Trigicon RMR, grip reduction by Swords International and retexturing, and it performs very, very well, and. You know, I've got a choice of using the factory magazine with 10 rounds or taking a factory magazine and adding the Glock plus 2 extension, which, you know, causes controversy in itself because I keep hearing, well, it makes it just as long as a Glock 19 it's not just as long and almost as long, still isn't just as long. And if you could bobtail a Glock 19, then yes, it would be very close. But since we can't, no, it's not the same. But like I said, the PM9, if I'm going to carry strictly inside the waistband, I'm going to carry something a little more substantial than the PM9. And it's, you know, depending on how much I'm willing to dress around my sidearm.
Now, how do you carry your PM9 when you carry it?
PM9 is usually either worn inside the waistband behind a buckle. It's kind of funny. I've actually worn it that way, with a shirt tucked in, which I cannot do with my current configuration with my Glock 26. but I can carry the PM9 inside the waistband behind a belt buckle with a shirt tucked in up on the pulpit and nobody's the wiser. With the Glock 26, I usually have to go with a closed front cover garment. I'm sure that I could use some other type of concealment holsters and possibly get around that. But I mean, the Glock 26 is much wider than the PM9, and the PM9 is a little bit wider than the shield, is it not?
Very little. I mean, very little. You know, before I shipped my PM9 off to Carr to get fixed, I held them both together, you know, upside down and laid them on top of my desk. And there's not a lot of difference. I mean, you know, what, 16th of an inch, maybe?
Okay.
You know, when it comes to carrying that, I don't think people are going to really notice too much of a difference on the thickness.
You know, and a lot of it, what people don't realize is when they look at it, when they get inside their waistband and they get their gear all situated and they're ready to go out for the day, they realize more of a difference than anybody else around them.
Right, right, they do. So when you carry your PM9 behind your belt buckle, the shirt tucked in, what kind of holster are you using?
I'm using a holster very much like the NPE, or the non-permissive environment holster, put up by Swords International. It's just a Kydex trigger guard cover.
Yeah, and by the way, folks, you got to go to Suarez International or OneSourceTactical.com and check out all the different holsters, because there's excellent holsters that I use and carry that SI is putting out, and it's just amazing, especially for those of you that do have RMR Glocks as well. Excellent holsters for that, so check that out.
And then, you know, when I carry it in a pocket, I use the DeSantis Nemesis. And it works out very well, and use a mag packer for a spare mag.
Yeah, the Nemesis are one of my favorites. I've also liked the DeSantis Superfly. I kind of like the outside texturing a little bit better on that one.
Yeah, it's a little more aggressive in the stickiness.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of cool. So what do you see? What else do you see as the advantage of the PM9?
Well, you know, the polygonal rifling or polygonal rifling, it'll give you a little more velocity. Is it enough to make a difference? I really couldn't tell you. I do know that I can engage targets out to 100 yards, a stationary target anyway. And while that isn't realistic in a self-defense situation, it is a confidence builder knowing that you can, in a sterile range environment, that you can hit what you're aiming at that distance.
Yeah, I think it was a couple of years ago I went over to Orange and I took ACRG, I think it was ACRG 3 with you, and I was ringing some steel at 50 yards. I wasn't quite as good as you at 100 yards, but 50, I was hitting it. I think what you had out there was like a 16-inch square plate or something like that?
Yes, sir.
So, yep. You know, its accuracy is definitely well known if the shooter does their job.
Yeah, and a lot of it too, Bob, is just comfort level. You know, your fundamentals don't change. It's just confidence and comfort level with what you've got and what you've been using.
Now, let's talk about confidence and comfort level. With these little pistols, you've really got to practice and train, because they are much more difficult to shoot than a standard size gun.
Absolutely, especially when you're looking at the shortened sight radius. You know, we've talked before about, and I hate to keep interjecting the Glock 26 in here, but with these other pistols, when you start reducing the real estate, the size of the pistol, I mean, forever and a day, when you talk about the 1911 and the legendary reliability of the government model, when you get to the commander size pistol, you still have that reliability. And when you get smaller than the commander model is when you start having some issues with reliability. But the other issue you have is your barrel length, the timing of the action, and the strength of the springs.
Okay.
Well, with these pocket pistols or these covert carry pistols or these backup guns, you know, you've got different things that have to go into account in order to make the pistol fire.
Okay.
And so in my mind, that's one of the things that makes the trigger action some of these smaller revolvers and smaller pistols makes the trigger less manageable, is that you've got to have that much more oomph to make it go bang. Whereas with something like the Glock 26, the internals are exactly the same as the Glock 17, as right. the Glock 19. That doesn't change.
Right, that's correct. Yeah, but the internals on the others are different.
Yes, they are. And there's a price to be paid for that.
What is that price?
Size. Overall size.
Yeah.
I mean, you take the receiver of a Glock 26, as far as if you were to take and cut the pistol down to where you had nothing left but the area directly under the trigger guard and directly in front of the trigger guard, and you cut a 19, a 26, and a 17, once you made those cuts, they would all be the same size.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Now, question, back to the PM9. When you carry it, do you carry it with the flush magazine, or do you carry it with the plus one extended magazine?
I carry it with the flush magazine.
Okay.
I've got more confidence in the flush magazine as far as concealment, and it's easier to grab a hold of the extended magazine from a magazine pouch than it is the flush one. And that's my only reason for that.
So you're carrying the extended magazine as your backup?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now, I've carried the PM9 both ways, with flush and with extended. I haven't noticed much of a difference at all in concealment unless I'm trying to pocket carry the thing. If I'm trying to pocket carry it, then, of course, the flush magazine works best.
Yes, sir. And once again, it's just a personal preference and confidence thing is all it is.
Now, I think Carr does a fabulous job with their slide and their barrel and all their internals. I mean, you know, the PM series, I think, are outstanding. Now, the C, I think they have the CM9, which is a little bit more of a scaled-down, less expensive version. I don't have much experience with those, but I can tell you that the PM series, very accurate. You brought up the polygonal rifling. I think that's how you say it. Outstanding. I mean, it's just outstanding. I would say it does have a little bit of an edge over the Smith & Wesson Shield in that regard.
The only problem I've ever had with the PM9 in the magazines is if you're not carrying your spare magazine in a magazine pouch of some sort. If you're carrying it loose in the pocket, which is a lazy thing to do, but I'm guilty of doing it, I've had the magazine decide to unload itself by a couple of rounds.
Really?
And I thought that was kind of unique. I've never had it happen with it being in a magazine pouch of any type, but loose in the pocket, I've had it decide to dump a few into my pocket.
So you got to be careful of that.
Yes, I wouldn't suggest. I did it one time, and that's what happened. And I thought, well, you know, that's a note to self that that's a bad idea.
Well, you got to have a the proper carrier for inside the pocket for your magazine.
Oh, inside the pocket or inside the waistband, we make a really nice this same name, an NPE magazine pouch made of Kydex that attaches to your belt with the 550 cord that you loop through your belt where inside the waistband just like you would the NPE holster, and it's very slick as far as slim, adds really nothing to your waistline, and it keeps that magazine secure.
Yeah. Now, I want to get your opinion on something. If a person is going to carry these two pistols as a backup or whatever you want to call it, not as a primary, one advantage I'm going to give to the Shield is it's got a longer sight radius. It's got a sight radius more like a Glock 26. So for people, I think that's can be an advantage.
Yeah, it can be if you have the opportunity to get on your sights, if it's a proactive situation.
Right.
You and I both know with reactive style training, you really aren't going to get on your sights to begin with. There's going to be other things that get you where you need to be. So the sight radius in a reactive situation isn't as important as it is with proactive.
Oh my God, John! Really? You mean you're not going to get on your sights? Boy, that's some controversial waters that you're walking through there. That's not possible and really shouldn't be done. You know that.
Well, it's only controversial to those that haven't done it, and those that don't know what they don't know. I mean, you can argue about the taste of water, but at the end of the day, it's still water. Some people get wound up on just the wrong things.
They sure do.
we look at people that evidently when the Shield was released, there were some people that were diehard car fans that were really upset that the Shield was released, and it was released at a price point that was about $200 less than the MSRP for the PM9, the brand loyalty thing just kind of boggles my mind, because I mean I don't know of one person personally that has stock in the car arms company. So, you know, why would they be so upset about Smith & Wesson producing the Shield? Or for that matter, Glock to come out with the Glock 42 and 380. To me, it's just not that big of a deal. It's, you know, whichever pistol floats your boat, and if it's a good quality pistol, it's a good quality pistol.
Well, I'd have to say, you know, I got to hand it to Smith & Wesson. I mean, coming out with this pistol at a much lower price point than something like a Kar PM9. But I think you're actually getting a little bit better gun with the PM9. Although I like both and I carry both and I'm a big fan of both, I think you're getting what you're paying for with a PM9.
I'm sure that you probably are, and there's probably processes that may cost a little more with the PM9, and you know, and that's fine. You talked about the CM9. One of my closest friends, he enjoyed my PM9 so much that he bought the CM9, and we haven't seen any issues with it. Of course, it's got Palmer sights instead of steel sights, and the finish on the slide isn't quite as nice, and the cuts aren't quite as nice and polished, but. Overall, it handles exactly the same, and he's been thoroughly pleased with it. And I was pleased with it because prior to that, he was carrying a Bursa, and every time that I took him out to the range to get him to practice with it, there was some type of issue. No matter what ammo we were using, he would have some failure to feed or failure to eject, and I, you know, we really need to look at getting you something that has, you know, just, you know, a little more quality to it, and you're not having these issues with. And you know, when the first thing he did was, believe it or not, he bought a Glock 19.
Oh wow!
And I was very pleased about that, and he's thoroughly enjoyed it. And then to go with his Glock 19, he got the CM9, and he's very happy with that. And usually, when you buy a quality pistol and you put the time in to work with it and train with it, you are going to be pleased with it.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, the CM9 has a staked front sight instead of dovetail, right?
Yes, sir. You're correct.
Yeah, which I think there is an advantage in the dovetail sights. I mean, it's not that you can't work with the staked sights or switch them out. You can. I like the dovetail better.
I think there's an advantage too. I mean, it's just a stronger mounting system, and if you've got the proper tools, it's easier to change out to something else you like. And once again, like you've already stated about the PM9, is you're limited to what sights that you can get. I'm still using the factory sights on my PM9. I'm perfectly happy with the factory sights for what I use it for.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, there's some other things we want to talk about, but before we get off the subject of these two small guns here, anything else you want to throw in about that?
I think that pretty much covers it. To me, the PM9, you know, you hear people say that, well, I shoot this more accurately than I shoot that, and a lot of that boils down to fundamentals. I shot your Shield, and I feel like I shot it very accurately. Now, I did notice when I shot your Shield that I had to take a 6 o'clock hold to hit where I wanted to hit. Now, that could have been the factory sights that you had on there at the time. I don't know if you've switched those out or not. But as long as I held that same sight picture, it shot very well. In all reality, it will outshoot me.
Yeah, it was the sights that I had on the pistol. Now that I've switched them out, I was at the range yesterday practicing with it, and it's point of aim, point of impact now.
Now, with my PM9, I've shot it enough and carried it enough and had the confidence in it. I feel like, you know, I draw that PM9 out to point and begin to press the trigger, and when that trigger breaks, it hits exactly where I want it to. And that's just familiarity. It's all that is.
Yeah. Well, and you know, in closing on these, I would like to say, you know, if you're somebody that owns a lot of Smith & Wesson M&P pistols, then the Shield is going to be incredibly familiar, and it's just going to be like picking up any of your other guns. If you're somebody that owns a lot of Glocks or some other type of polymer pistols, I think you're probably going to enjoy that PM9 because One of the first things I noticed when I bought mine a long time ago was that I thought, hey, this is kind of like a mini Glock, but it's got a double action trigger.
It's the pistol that I wish Glock had come out with first.
Exactly.
And so I really, some people don't like the trigger on the PM9. I like it quite a bit. The smoothness, some people think that it's too long. I think that it's just long enough. It's the important thing to take away between the PM9 and the Shield is that the Shield sucks. Of course, you know I'm joking. But.
I know you're joking, yeah, but that's good. And one other thing I'll throw in is if you're listening to this and you're the kind of person that's carried a revolver as a backup gun, I think you're going to like the trigger on the Carr PM9 much better than a revolver. Would you agree?
I would agree, unless the person, you know, like I said, I know people that just they really prefer a revolver, and that's just personal taste.
Yeah.
One more thing. Now, refresh my memory. Your Shield, that is a blackened stainless slide. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. That comes standard on the Shield, right?
Correct.
Okay. In order to get the blackened stainless slide on the PM9, that costs extra.
It does, and they're hard to find.
And they are hard to find. That, and that is the one that I chose. That's called the PM9 Black Diamond. And I think that's important to note that you're going to spend extra money on that blackened slide on the PM9, and it comes as a factory standard option, or it is standard on the Shield.
Now, I prefer the stainless steel slide that's on my PM9.
That's because you're flashy, Bob.
I know. I'm flashy. I like to create a good impression and impress people at the range.
I know that you thought about having your PM9 frame Cerakoted pearl white, so...
Yeah, bright orange might be better, though. All right, so let's switch gears here. Off the air, we were talking a little bit about the gun culture out there, and especially on different forums and things like that. I think you've kind of noticed some certain type of discussion that people like to stick with, haven't you?
Which discussions has this being completely gun centric? Everything revolves around the newest Binky Blaster. Is my the term that I coined for that. I just bought this, or I've got this, and what do you guys think? One of the things I really like is when someone buys a pistol and then goes onto a forum and says, "Hey, I bought this. What do you think?" And then they get upset if someone doesn't agree with them. Instead of, "Hey guys, I'm thinking about buying this. What do you think?" It's kind of an afterthought. I'm gonna buy this. Now I want you to reaffirm my decision.
Yeah, they want you to justify their decision.
And I think that's kind of silly, but that's just something that happens. And I think one of the things that I've noticed is in the self-defense forums, there's entirely too much emphasis given to the hardware and not nearly enough given to the software.
Have you ever noticed that? You ever notice a forum where somebody starts the forum and it's about a specific gun, and there might be like 115 responses, and then somebody else starts a sub-thread on a certain training technique and you might have 10 responses?
I see that quite a bit. That's been going on for some time. You go from a thread about how accurate a certain gun is with a certain ammo, and look at this nice tiny group that I just shot, to I did force on force this past weekend, and I got stung several times. Well, people don't like getting stung, and they don't want to talk about the number of BBs that they caught or whatever else. It's kind of like more gratifying to their ego to talk about how well they can shoot and not the tactics or things that where they found out they weren't as good as they thought they were.
Yeah, people don't want to talk about that. I think human nature.
The bottom line is, when it comes to honesty, the first person, the most important person to be honest to is yourself.
You got to be honest with others, and then you got to be honest with yourself as well. Now, getting back to a point you made earlier about somebody puts on the forum, "Hey, I just bought this gun. What do you think?" You know why I think that happens?
Why?
Well, in 29 years of being in sales, I've learned a couple things. And most people make decisions logically, and they back them up emotionally. I'm talking about buying decisions. The vast majority of buying decisions are based on emotion. And then they justify it logically. So emotion gets the best of them. They buy this product, whatever it is, a gun, and then they seek the logic to back up their decision. So they go on the forum and they say, hey, what do you folks think? And what they're thinking of, what they're wanting is they're wanting the logic to justify the money that they just spent on the gun that they brought home.
That makes a lot of sense, Bob.
You know, and so I've learned that. You know, I mean, I've learned something in 29 years of being out there persuading people to buy stuff. And so I even learned that you got to appeal to people's emotions, but then they're going to back it up logically. And that's what happens on a forum. And it's funny because when they don't get the logical responses that they're seeking, they sort of get mad.
They do. They get upset. And it's nothing that surprises me after all these years. And especially now that we've got the internet and instant communication, that there are still threads out there with caliber wars. that completely boggles my mind. I don't understand that. I really, as long as someone's carrying a reasonable caliber, meaning 9mm up to a .45, I don't care what they carry. That's an individual choice.
Yeah. Well, I've seen less discussion on caliber wars than in the past, but you're right, there's still some out there.
Yeah, there's still some out there. It's not as much as it used to be. Now it's, you know, my Glock's the best thing since store-bought sliced white bread and your shield sucks, or my shield's the best thing ever and your car's no good, or that red dot on your pistol's going to get you killed, or, you know, all kinds of silliness. And you watch things kind of go in revolutions, and I love reading old threads about the RMR on pistols, and all the naysayers, you know, 3-4 years ago compared to now, that the red dots on pistols are going mainstream, and now that you have manufacturers that are producing pistols that are made for the red dots, a lot of those naysayers have fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, they have. And, you know, as we both know, you know, Glock just recently got involved in manufacturing pistols set up for the red dots. Although it's not that terrific of a system, at least they kind of, the light came on with somebody at Glock, didn't it?
Evidently.
Yeah. So, what else have you noticed out there about, what's going on in the gun culture movement? I know you said something about Texas Open Carry coming.
Well, yeah, there's a chance that we may get open carry in Texas. And what I think is unfortunate is it's gone from a conversation on whether or not we're going to get it and more of a political statement.
What do you mean by that?
Well, for instance, it's turned in. Well, look at the number of groups that are out there walking around holding these open carry protests. Carrying rifles on their back, and they say they're doing it for, you know, the public's education. And there's people out there that are claiming that it's because of these groups that this is now, you know, being heard in the Texas government. And I don't see it that way. I think some of these groups have done more harm than they have good. And I also believe that, you know, this is just John Payne speaking here. I think some of these groups, or some of these individuals in these groups, may not be on our side.
That's true. They sort of act like they're not.
So, but they open carry doesn't affect me one way or the other. If we get it, right now it looks like if we do get it, it's going to be a licensed open carry, which I think it's going to be interesting on how they implement that, if that does occur. You know, for those that are saying that the open carry is going to be a thing for self-defense, I don't see it that way.
Now, let me ask your opinion on something, John. As you're a law enforcement officer, so give us the law enforcement perspective on open carry. How do you feel about it, and how do you think that other law enforcement officers are going to react to it?
Well, I can't speak for anybody else, but speaking for me, myself, and I, you know, I am a pro pro-gun officer, and I've encountered hundreds of citizens with firearms, and it's, you know, just part of my job, part of what I do. We have actually had training on encountering people that are open carrying long guns because, you know, if they're not committing any offense, we just cannot go up to them and demand that they ID themselves to us.
Okay.
And some people don't realize that.
You cannot do that?
No, I cannot just on a whim go up and demand that they identify themselves.
No, but if you have some kind of cause, like if a citizen called in a complaint or something, then you can, correct?
No, sir.
No?
A citizen calling in a complaint does not mean an offense has been committed.
Oh, okay. So what justifies you to go up and ask them to identify themselves?
Well, I can go up and talk to anybody at any time, just like you can.
Right.
In the scope of my duties, that they don't have to talk to me, but I can introduce myself. If they want, if I ask them to ID themselves, you know, will you identify yourself to me? They say no, then it's no.
Okay.
If they don't want to show me what they're carrying, then they don't have to.
Okay.
Now, at any time, they began carrying that weapon in a manner calculated to cause alarm, which people have to understand, just because it's slung over their back, that does not mean calculated to cause alarm.
Right.
Okay. But if they start muzzling people, things of that nature, now that is calculated to cause alarm. And at that point, I can detain them and ID them. But just standard carrying a rifle slung, it is not a manner calculated to cause alarm.
Well, so, all right, and that's a good point. So let's talk about open carrying pistols. So let's say we get open carry in Texas, it's licensed open carry, and people start walking around with, large pistols open carrying, and they're walking into grocery stores and things. What kind of a reaction do you think that we're going to get here in Texas?
Right now, I honestly couldn't tell you. One thing that, since I have done it in Arizona, I've open carried in Arizona, I've open carried in New Mexico, and you go about your business, do what you're supposed to do, and act like any other citizen, and people don't bat an eye at you.
Okay.
If you go out in a way to get attention, you're going to get attention.
Yeah, yeah. Now, all right, so one of the things that I've always been concerned about with open carry is, I don't know how else to describe it. People out there who are ignorant, that don't understand that 99.8% of all people who carry a firearm are good, law-abiding citizens that don't want to cause anybody any trouble. And these freaked out people start, you know, calling police when they see somebody carrying a pistol, open carry. What do you think of that?
It's just today's culture. I mean, we are so removed from the days when everyone carried a gun openly that people aren't used to seeing it anymore.
Right.
Okay, so I can understand what some of these groups are saying, that they're just trying to educate the public when it comes to carrying their long guns in Texas, since, you know, open carry of a long gun is legal.
Right.
Some of their actions to me seem to go further than that. And it is not meant just to educate us. It's meant to get attention.
Okay. Now.
Go
ahead.
For people to open carry handguns, like I said, in other states where it's been legal for some time, it's not a big deal.
Exactly. It's not a big deal, and people are more used to seeing it, and it's, like you said, it doesn't really cause any major issues.
But even then, you don't see every citizen out there open carrying a handgun in Arizona or in New Mexico.
Right. Now, question about open carry, if we get it here, which it looks like we probably will. Do you think it's going to solve the issue of people that don't properly conceal their firearms?
I haven't seen an issue with that to begin with. That's primarily what I've seen. That's an internet issue and a forum issue. It's not a real life issue.
That's what I wanted to get your perspective on. I mean, obviously you've seen enough citizens carry. You can probably tell when someone's carrying quite often, can't you? Especially if they have a larger gun.
For the ones that are professional in how they do it? Not really. Some things I look for is the tactical Gucci wear.
Yeah.
But honestly, I mean, for the people that are serious about concealed carry and are serious about defending themselves or loved ones, you're not going to know if they've got a firearm or not.
No.
You know, there's whole threads and articles written about, you know, little tales that they give about protecting their gun side and things of that nature. But most of the time when I've encountered someone that's carrying a concealed handgun, it's been because some minor traffic infraction has been committed and they hand me their CHL with their driver's license is how I become aware that they're carrying a handgun.
Yeah. Well, and I've lost count how many times I've been carrying and nobody knew because nobody's really looking for it and everybody is just kind of oblivious to it. And then once they find out that I am carrying simply because I told them, they were shocked. They couldn't believe that I pulled it off. And, you know, it's just people just don't even, they don't even expect it.
You know, it's more of a big deal on the forums and on the internet and in the individual carrier's mind than it is out in the world.
Exactly. And you mentioned the individual carrier's mind. Let me address that. I've mentioned this before. You know, when you're carrying a firearm, I think you have to just act normally. You cannot act like you're carrying a pistol. You're going to give yourself away. And even though it's not really a major problem if you give yourself away because, you know, you're doing something that's legal, a lot of people, I think, get real self-conscious when they're carrying a gun. I think you got to get over that.
Well, I think that's to be expected when it's something new.
Right.
But, you know, with proper training and practice, it becomes the same as putting on a seatbelt.
Exactly. You know, I think you got to walk around. Whenever you go into an establishment, you got to just walk around normally like you own the place and like it's no big deal.
Well, yeah, and it's no different than, I mean, I don't leave the house without my sidearm. I don't leave the house without my watch. I don't leave the house without my wedding band. I don't leave the house without my pocket knife. I don't go around town thinking, gee, people can see my knife. People can see my watch. People can see my wedding band. I don't think that way. I don't think, someone, they know that I'm carrying because I don't care. You know, I take reasonable steps to conceal it and I go about my business.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned something earlier I want you to reiterate a little bit. You said you're a pro-gun law enforcement officer, and of course we all expect that you would be. I know you say you can't speak for other people, but I think you know as well as everybody listening to this that there are officers out there that are not pro-gun. How do you think that some of them are going to react once open carry is approved here?
You know, I really don't know. I don't know what steps they're going to take to – I mean, how am I going to know that someone walking into Eckerd's – Do those even still exist?
I don't know. I don't know.
Walk into Walgreens with a open handgun displayed. How am I going to know that they're licensed? If that's the one that passes.
How are you going to know?
You know? And at the same time, if they're not doing anything other than carrying a handgun, what reason would I have to contact them to begin with?
Good point. That's a good point.
You know, it's been stated over and over again that the mere presence of a firearm, and in Texas right now it pertains to long guns, the mere presence of a firearm does not indicate that there's any type of criminal activity taking place.
You're exactly right. People listening to this show know you're exactly right, but many people in the general public don't know that.
Well, maybe somebody that's in the general public that doesn't know is listening to your show and will understand that as well.
I would love a whole lot more of them to listen to this show.
but, you know, just the presence of a firearm in and of itself does not mean that there's been an offense committed or offense is being committed. So I'm kind of curious to see how they're going to implement this if it does pass. You know, and like I said, I'm good if it passes. I'm good if it doesn't pass. It's not a deal killer for me.
I just wish that if they pass it, that it wouldn't be licensed open carry because, like you said, how are you going to know if somebody's licensed or not? I'd rather just see either open carry or not. Either everybody can do it or nobody can do it.
you know, yeah, so it's going to be interesting. I'm sure someone's already thinking, somebody in the Texas government is thinking up a plan for that, hopefully, because that's one of the things that struck me was, well, how are we going to know? But even with the constitutional carry, you know, there's things about that kind of perplex me.
What's that?
Well, like, in one instance, the Texas Constitution, or the Texas Bill of Rights, I believe it is, the Bill of Rights is going to be, I believe, Section 23, covers the right to keep and bear arms in Texas, and it says every citizen shall have the right to keep and bear arms in the lawful defense of himself or the state. But the legislature shall have power by law to regulate the wearing of arms with a view to prevent crime.
Okay.
I believe in order to pass constitutional carry in Texas, then that section of the Texas Bill of Rights would have to be deemed unconstitutional, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess you're right. It'd have to be changed.
So that's one of the things that perplexes me. The other is that, you know, I keep hearing people talk about the CHL program being unconstitutional because, you know, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. But, to the best of my knowledge, the Supreme Court of the United States has deemed that the CHL program is not an infringement.
Well, let me make a comment about that, because I'm kind of on the other side there. Yes, the Supreme Court has deemed that it's not an infringement. But who says the Supreme Court is always correct? Who says that they always make the right decision? They've made a lot of wrong decisions, and they've made a lot of wrong interpretations. And I think, I sort of think that if you have to ask permission of your government, whether it's federal or state, if you have to ask permission to carry, I think that that's really getting into some pretty sticky territory there.
At the same token, I think the term asking for permission in Texas is kind of an exaggeration because Texas is a shall issue state.
That's correct. It is a shall issue. So, you know, as long as you take the class and pay the fee and you're not a convicted felon, they shall issue you a license. That is correct. You know, there's a lot of people that will argue that forcing people to take a class is an infringement. There are people who will argue that.
And I do understand their argument, but at the same time, that argument goes both ways. It's just like arguments on the First Amendment. And you and I have discussed this privately, but, you know, we have the right to free speech. But at the same token, you do not have the right to libel somebody. You don't have the right to commit disorderly conduct, vulgar language, as a breach of the peace in a public place.
Right.
You don't have the right to stand up and yell fire in a theater. When there is no fire, so there are regulations that are in place, even though you have the right to free speech. So, you know, I'm not sure in my own mind about some of the all or nothing type addresses to these issues.
Right.
You know, if you go by what's written in black and white for the Constitution, and just on face value, we would have no need for attorneys.
Well, that's true. That's true. Now
we would have no need for interpretations. You know, it's Google must be just making money hand over fist with all the constitutional lawyers they've created.
Yeah, this is good discussion. You know, and I would say that, you know, I have to remind people that there are states out there that are not shall issue. They're may issue states. And those are a direct infringement.
You know, I see, I think what you're saying there too. And, you know, we start talking about, you know, states' rights and, you know, the states have the right to self-govern. And, you know, we have our Bill of Rights from the Constitution. So the whole thing, to me, it gets to where it muddies the water a little bit.
Yeah, it does. It does. One final.
And I'm a person, I don't get deep in the weeds on politics.
No.
You know, all the thing that ever does is give me heartburn. You know, I look at it like this. My first responsibility is to my faith. My second responsibility is to my family, and my third responsibility are to the ones that I care about. You know, we call it God, family, tribe. And, you know, if I take care of those three things, then I'm doing pretty good. You know, I worry about taking care of me and keep my household in order. And if I'm in order, my household's in order, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, then I can worry about other folks. You know, kind of like, you know, where it's mentioned about the, you know, the log in your own eye before removing the speck from your brother's eye.
Right.
But people get real deep in the weeds on some of this stuff, and it gets real emotional, and they get real upset. And even right now, there's people that are lobbying for these different types of carry, or this constitutional carry, because right now, by statute, they don't qualify for a concealed carry permit. And if it passes where it's licensed open carry, they won't be able to do it.
No, that's true. That's true. Now, one final question, because I don't want this to run too long, but one final question for you. What would you rather see? Would you rather see a federal concealed carry license that's good in all 50 states, that the federal government says, okay, if you get this, it's good in all 50 states? Or would you rather see the way it is right now and let the states continue to deal with it?
Oh, Bob, man, that is a hard question.
I know. I like to ask hard questions.
Whenever you give the federal government the authority to regulate something like that, you know, a broad stroke, things never go well.
That's what bothers me.
Yeah, that's what bothers me. And at the same time, the way things are right now, like you said, some states don't handle this to what I consider to be fairly. They put too many restrictions on the citizens of that state. Now, the citizens of that state can take issue with that by voting and putting the people in place they need to put in place, or they can pick up their marbles and move to a freer state. That all depends on how deeply you are in your convictions. What I would like to see is that every law-abiding citizen that wants the ability to protect themselves have that ability.
Yeah, I would too. It's just that it is a tough question, and it's not going to be answered on this episode or really answered very easily at all. But, you know, who gives them that right? I'm kind of like you. It makes me real nervous when the federal government gets involved in stuff like this. But on the other hand, it sure would be nice if our concealed carry licenses were like driver's licenses and good in all 50 states.
I can understand that, and I can agree with that. It's a really hard question on exactly how it would be implemented and how much control the federal government would have over that program. Or would it be implemented by the federal government and controlled by the states?
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, John, thanks. I think this is a good stopping point. Thanks for coming on. Why don't you take a minute or two to talk about some classes you got coming up?
Okay. Well, I've got let me pull this up for you real quick. I've got a class coming up next weekend, March 7th and 8th in Orange, Texas. I'm doing Rifle Gunfighting 1, and that's going to be a Saturday and Sunday class, and we've got good numbers for that class. And the weather, as always, is going to be perfect for training. Yep. I just put out a message the other day for my students to ensure they had cold weather gear and rain gear. I will be in Lubbock June 13th and 14th doing CRG3, Advanced Gunfighting. That's a class you've had, what, three times now?
No, I've actually only taken that one once. And as a matter of fact, I want listeners to know, most likely I will be at that class that you're going to be teaching in June.
Yeah, that'll be in June at Lubbock. That's a lot of very exciting class, very action-packed class. You know, we do everything from fingertip distance to your target out to 100 yards. We work both sides evenly. We don't believe in a strong side and a weak side. We believe in a left and a right.
Yep.
And then in September, I will be in Houston, Texas, doing a CRG Level 1 pistol gunfighting class in Houston, and that'll be September 26th and 27th.
All right.
And we've had some demand for that in the Houston area, so we'll be getting some new shooters in that class. And one of the things that we've been discussing is some of the more advanced students going through that class. And instead of going through that class and just rehashing everything, they'll go through that class with a mirror rig. In other words, if they're right-handed, they'll go through that class left-handed.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And so it really helps with your ambidextrous skills. And then the other one that I'll be attending will be in Arizona, and that will be the Red Dot Pistol School. And I believe that will be the 11th, 12th, and 13th. Let me see if I can find that real quick.
While you're finding that, I'll let everybody know that if they want to sign up for these classes, they can go to SuarezInternational.com, and they can find all of these. I'll put a link in the show notes for that, too. And like I said, most likely I'm going to be out there in June at Lubbock because I'd like to take that class again. I'm fairly sure it's only once that I've taken that. So I got to sharpen those skills again.
Let's see here, Bob. My Google Foo seems to be a little bit weak at the moment. I'll pull it up here in just a second.
Okay.
Anyway, that will be up in Prescott, Arizona. And
okay,
it's an exciting class. Of course, it revolves around the Swords International Red Dot pistols.
Right.
And let's see, I've got it right here.
And that's a good thing, by the way, because if you've got a red dot on your pistol, you definitely need to train with it. It's a different ball game than shooting with iron sights.
It is. And let's see here. One more click.
And you said because the red dots are becoming more mainstream and more people are getting them, if they're a typical iron sight shooter and they're used to that, it is a transition in moving over to a red dot. There's some certain techniques.
It is, and we can help you with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can make that a seamless transition. But I was right, Bob. This is September 11th through the 13th in Prescott, Arizona.
Okay.
And there will be a multitude of SWORS instructors and affiliates. So, I mean, the instructor-to-student ratio will be like 5-1.
That's awesome.
So, we've actually taken that one in that class, taking the handguns out to past 200 yards, just showing the capabilities of these red dot pistols. So it's a neat class. It's a fun class. A lot of good times together. The last time that we taught one of these was December 2011. So this is the first one. It'll be in 2015. So that's 4 years.
That's cool.
And we're going to go over everything we've learned in the past 4 years running the Red Dot system. And we'll cover everything from maintenance to carry to how to employ the modern combat handgun.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good stuff. Thank you, John. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on. And this was a great discussion. I think people have enjoyed it.
Hey, thank you, Bob.
All right, take care.
Okay, many thanks to John Payne. Check out his classes. Check out the Suarez International website with a lot of good stuff on it. And I will most likely be at that June class in Lubbock to take Advanced Close Range Gunfighting Level 3, ACRG Level 3. Hey, for all of you who love these acronyms, I messed it up in the early part of the show, but IPSC stands for International Practical Shooting Confederation. Okay, I got that right now. International Practical Shooting Confederation. Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with John Payne. I just want to say this in closing the show. This is a commercial-free show, ladies and gentlemen. I don't have a bunch of sponsors on here, so it's supported by generous listeners like you. Don't forget about the classes that Ben and I are teaching. We are going to the state of Washington, the state of South Dakota, the state of Ohio, and by the way, our Dallas class is sold out. April 18th, we're teaching Beyond Concealed Carry. It's sold out, but you can get on a waiting list. We keep our classes... You know, I'm not going to tell you exactly how many people we cut it off at to make it sold out, but we want the student to have a good experience. We're not all about money. We want the student to have a good experience, and the way we teach our classes is we want people to get the trigger time that they are paying for and the personal attention that they are paying for from the instructor. So, we have cut the attendance off at a reasonable number for the Dallas class, and there's a waiting list. But go ahead and get on the waiting list if you're interested, because there's usually a last-minute cancellation or two. So check out the class schedule at handgunworld.com. I'd also like to invite you to leave voicemails for the show. If you have comments about anything that's been covered, questions, whatever, if you want me to put it on the air and talk about your question, I'll do that. The voicemail number is 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Or go to handgunworld.com and click the call me button. That means calling me or calling into the show, and it'll hook you up with the great use of modern technology. Also, please remember our Shooters Club. You can get a collection, you can have access to a collection of really cool videos that Ben and I have put together, instructional videos. It's a password-protected site. Once you sign up, it's only $75 a year or $8 per month to make it affordable for you. Then we send you the password and you can watch all the videos on there. And last but not least, you don't have to spend any extra money just by supporting me if you make your purchases on my Amazon store link. I have an Amazon Associates or Amazon Affiliates program. And proceeds help benefit the Handgun World podcast. So go to handgunworld.com, click the Amazon store, go to that link, save that link so you don't have to go through that every single time, and just make your purchases that way on Amazon. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next week. Goodbye.